Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Currently available through the NASS website is the 2022 Ag Census.
Ryan Combs is with the National Ag Statistics Service.
We have the market value of ag products rankings. We have state and county profiles, congressional district profiles and rankings, and the race, ethnicity, and gender profiles. Upcoming, we're going to be having the American Indian Reservations Report that will be released on August the 29th. We have Ag Census web maps that are scheduled to be available September the 10th. The specialty crops publication will be available on October the 17th. And we'll have a zip code tabulation available on November the 7th. We do have a couple of our special studies that will also be released later this year. So the 2023 Irrigation and Water Management Survey will be available on October the 31st. And then the 2023 Census of Aquaculture will be available on December the 16th.
This is Agriculture Today.
I'm speaking with Ted McKinney, who is the CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, and he was the keynote speaker here at Tech Hub Live. A great address, Ted. It was wonderful. You gave a lot of energy here in the room. One of your main messages was about climate change and how we can address climate change and do climate-smart agriculture and still increase productivity. Why are you so optimistic about that?
Well, I have been witness on our own farm and in my industry days to the advancement of innovation across the board. As I say it lovingly, the crops and the critters and everything in between. So I've seen it. And based on what I have been hearing and then what I saw at this conference in the types of companies here and what they're doing, it's mind-blowing. So I'm juiced because I see it has not stopped. In fact, I'd say innovation is accelerating. What's lost, though, are the messages where people, understandably, are very concerned about climate change and all the things that go with that, soil health, air, all those things. Fine. We must address that. No disagreement here, and I would guess most of ag would not disagree. They would agree. What I'm concerned about is I'm not hearing anybody say it's both. And sometimes wealthy societies have that happen to them. We can all afford our food, but what about the countries of Africa, Central South America, Asia Pacific, where they rely on our feed grains? Quality, yes. Lower cost, yes, because we're so efficient. What are we going to do? Say goodbye? Say so long? Say, sorry, climate change just took over. No, we can't do that, particularly when we don't have to. That's the point. I've seen developments over decades on our own farm, and I see the excitement of the people at this conference, and they all are bringing something new. We can do it both and not miss a beat.
Well, talking about climate-smart agricultural practices, and you also were asked about the 45Z tax credit, which was part of the, I mean, this was all part of the Inflation Reduction Act, getting into sustainable aviation fuel and the climate-smart agriculture practices, which we're going to need in order to qualify those biofuels for sustainable aviation fuel. Also, the idea of carbon capture pipelines. There seems to be a lot of elements in here that are going to, you know, that these biofuels producers are depending on to make happen.
Yes.
So your comments on that.
Yes. Well, Cindy, I'll hearken back to when ethanol, corn-based or sugarcane-based ethanol, came alive. It was a Herculean effort. Lobbying, call it influencing, call it education, whatever you want to call it. All of ag came out very active in that, and I think we've got to do the same. Though it seems obvious to you and me, the benefits, whether it's addressing food waste by putting it into sustainable aviation fuel or renewable biodiesel or whatever the name might carry, my gosh, agriculture and the processors downstream are doing a great job. But let's just be honest. The oil and gas lobby is very alive, very well, and very strong. And everybody is getting in the ear of Secretary Yellen at Treasury, the president's in ear and his advisors, and it's, you know, it's tough to call the balls and the strikes when you're in that situation. But I think logic, need, care for the environment, care for farmers who need that help now. I'm glad we're on this side, not the other. I'll put it that way.
Here at Tech Hub Live in Des Moines, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Unfortunately, I would say at this point, if you're a betting person, it is a pretty safe bet to say that that fiscal year 23 farm bill, what we were aiming for, is now not just looking like 2024, but is probably even the 2025 farm bill.
Sigrid Johannes is Senior Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
I think it's going to be a really tall order for Congress to get that piece of legislation done, to, again, work through and reconcile all those differences that each respective party has. We were very pleased with the draft that came out of the House Agriculture Committee that Chairman G.T. Thompson led, a tremendous bill for production agriculture, a lot of really important stuff in there. But unfortunately, you know, the Senate has very different ideas, and Senator Stabenow's version is much more of a mixed bag from our viewpoint. And so there's a lot of reconciliation that needs to be done between those two items. I think it would be a really, really tall order to expect this Congress, which has been dysfunctional pretty much since day one of this 118th Congress, I think it would be really extraordinary to expect them to get the farm bill done before the end of this calendar year, as well as those 12 appropriations bills that need to happen, especially when a lot of members, particularly on the House side, have just scheduled more time for themselves to go home and campaign for pretty much the entire month of August. They'll be back in their districts working up to the election. And then also in October, they have a very lengthy recess scheduled as well. So it's kind of extraordinary. There's not too many industries, Tony, where you can be away from your desk for this amount of time, but Congress seems to do it every year. They do it every cycle, and floor time is going to be a really, really precious commodity for the rest of 2024.
So we leave the farm bill discussion to talk demand for beef. Dr. Glenn Tonser, livestock economist, Kansas State.
In the middle of July, Justin Bina, which is a PhD student who's en route to Arizona State, shout out here, you know, publicly, he got a faculty job at Arizona State, so congrats to him. And he's helped me a lot with the MDM project over time, which is nice. He led a special report, which leveraged a call out in the media in the last year or two about how concentrated beef purchasing is within the U.S. population. And specifically, is it a minority of the public that's buying the majority of the beef, as opposed to the 330 million people in the country kind of all buying the same amount, which very rarely does anything work that way. But sort of how concentrated is consumption of beef in the U.S. is the way to think about it. And that's been looked at in different ways over time with different data sets. So he took the MDM, which has upfront questions on, did you have beef for breakfast, lunch, or dinner? So we kind of have this frequency count for each person. And then subsequently, was it ground beef? Was it steak? There's a lot of kind of geekier, narrow details that come with that. And basically, on balance, was able to recreate the message that, yes, beef consumption is fairly concentrated. So the frequency of beef consumption, because that's what we're talking about here, is notably higher for males and females. It's notably higher for younger individuals than older individuals. And as you look at adjustments across income, so when we go from low income to middle income to higher income, the main shift is across categories within beef more than across species. So, for example, when you're talking lower income group, you're much more likely to have had ground beef yesterday than you are to have a steak. Talking higher income, it's the reverse. And there's this shift sort of within the beef space, so to speak, on frequency, much more than there is across beef, pork, and chicken products, is the point. That aligns very nicely with an argument I've made for several years that what economists call cross price elasticities. So the connections between the mechanisms to substitute between beef, pork, and chicken have been shrinking over time. People make less of those substitutions because of price. They make them for reasons that aren't about price, is the point. And his findings definitely align with that. So that's probably enough on that special report. Hopefully teased and raised awareness on it. Like all those things, everything for the MDM, you can find it on our agmanager.info website. You're welcome to pull it up, review it. If you have questions, your listeners or other future listeners of this are welcome to reach out to me about it.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We've got the corn contracts. Again, I don't want to beat the weather down, but that's been relatively friendly.
Bob Mowers with Manduka Trading in Chicago has been watching the weather and grains.
The bigger takeaway is that it doesn't seem to be as much a concern. The crop conditions are going to start to flow lower in that good extra category, and we will get another data point this afternoon in terms of the crop condition indices, so we'll see how that plays out. Export demand, ethanol still remains strong, so I guess that's one favorable thing. And then in terms of wheat, I think the bigger picture there had been that there was some pressure from corn and soybeans helping to push it lower. But like I mentioned, today it was up 6-7 cents. We'll see how that plays out over the short term here. Also, if you look around the world, Canada, the U.S. ag attaché estimated that wheat production to about 35.5 million metric tons. That's up 0.5 million metric tons from their previous estimate, or from the USDA's estimate, I should say. And then Silvercon raised their Russian production to 84.7 million metric tons, up from 84.1 in their previous forecast. So those are some of the data points that became, you know, that I tend to look at on a week-to-week basis. Obviously, we got to keep our eyes on what's going on with the weather. But net-net, I think the bigger picture is, you know, how do you really expect any kind of sustaining gains in any of those big three markets that we talk about, corn, wheat, or soybeans, when we've got pretty burdensome supplies? We've got ample supply in terms of potential ending stocks here in the United States and also in the world. So there's really going to have to be something that comes along that really reduces the expectations in terms of production, or reduces the expectations in terms of the next planting season, in order for this market to really, I think, have any true legs. And just to finish that thought, I know we've been doing this for quite some time. I look at seasonal tendencies, and being that we're just a couple of few days from the beginning of August, I thought I'd pull up the tendencies. Now, these aren't written in stone. There's always going to be those anomaly years where things do exactly the opposite, regardless of how far back you go in terms of price direction during a particular time period. But I'm looking at the corn, wheat, and soybean tendencies for the month of August. And for corn, it's just my opinion, straight down. And then for wheat, it's similar, pretty much straight down. That's a soft red winter wheat, straight down. And then for Kansas hard red winter wheat, straight down. And then for soybeans, this one's a little different. Depends on the time period you're looking at. There's been some years where it's been down, but there's been more recent years where it's actually been steady to higher. So maybe we get some kind of weather scare during, like what I mentioned was the prime time for soybean production in August. So that one is a little different than corn and wheat. We'll see if that plays out. And I know we haven't mentioned yet, but for cattle, it also tends to be a challenging month, being that it tends to move lower quite a bit. And then also for feeder cattle, you know, a little more choppy, but generally the direction is lower. So a little perspective there, a little context, and those are some of the things that I'm looking at lately.
He says it's also a challenging time for cattle.
For cattle, it also tends to be a challenging month, being that it tends to move lower quite a bit. And then also for feeder cattle, you know, a little more choppy, but generally the direction is lower. So a little perspective there, a little context, and those are some of the things that I'm looking at lately.
It's Agriculture Today.
I'm speaking with Ted McKinney, who is the CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, and he was the keynote speaker here at Tech Hub Live. Trade, that was your thing at USDA. It seems the last few years we have not done a whole lot on trade in this administration. What are your views on that? Do you think we've let ag trade go in the last few years?
Well, without pointing fingers, we have. I thought it was said very well when the trade rep herself was at a hearing and said, well, here's the dilemma. Farmers and ag loves trade, and lots of manufacturing don't like trade. I think it was more unions don't like trade, but and that's a true statement. So here she is caught in the middle. You know, I wish she had an ag background so we could see some good, honest bias, but I'm kidding on that. I would have liked to seen us at least make the effort to trade, do more trade in ag. And if we're going to fight battles on chips and cars and widgets and anything else that's non-ag, fine. But let ag do its thing. We're now a net food importer. I never thought I'd see the day. Now, I can rationalize that. Some of that's because we buy high-priced wines and spirits out of Europe, and that skews it. Come on, give me a break. For the first time, we are net importers. And at a time when we've got to diversify our portfolio, I mean, there are risks with countries like China, for example. I'd love to see us trade a lot more with China, and I think we could. But when that is in question, you diversify your portfolio. And when you do that, you've got to have a good level playing field. And when so many countries are either cheating the WTO or are not signed on to the WTO, then when their tariffs are not one, but oftentimes four, five, six times higher than they're doing a deal with Australia or good friendly competitor of ours, we're screwed, man. So I hope that there is a renewed effort to look at that. I think ag could do a better job at describing how ag does benefit workers, whether it's unionized or not. I mean, think of the people in the rail, in the shipping, in the stevedore or port business or anything else who benefit. A lot of those are unionized and they're benefiting from ag. So maybe it's, we've got to find that better story to tell. I don't mean to be Pollyannish with that. I suspect it's way more than that, but gosh, that could be a starting point. But no, we've got to get serious about ag trade. That's when you've got to be on your A game in all the other areas to soften that blow, because cycles are going to happen. Can't stop that. But we're at a quarter time when we're not on our A game. Maybe in some areas, but not in all of them. And you've got to be on your A game at all times. I mean, the Olympics is a great, I mean, you can be the best of the best in competing with athletes. Let's take swimming in the U.S. When you go up against other countries, it's a new day. And you got to get off that platform right. Your breathing's got to be right. Your diet's got to be right. Well, same goes for farming and ranching and all the processing downstream. And we're not on our A game yet. We can get there, though. And that's what this conference is so valuable in doing, is it's giving us the tools to make those decisions, minimize risk, and make a good decision. But even then, we've got to get more certainty into agriculture.
But overall, you're optimistic.
I am still an optimist, and I always will be.
Here at Tech Hub Live in Des Moines, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
Thanks, Cindy. And this is the Farm Station, all ag, all day.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Over 80% of the Farm Bill funds nutrition programs. It's a huge part of our social safety net in the U.S.
Jenny Ift is a farm policy expert at Kansas State University.
It also funds most parts of the farm safety net, conservation. Those are the big parts in terms of dollars. But beyond that, it funds all kinds of public goods, whether it's our extension system, partially funds our extension system, the Forest Service. It provides funding for rural government. So all Americans are affected by the Farm Bill.
Which is why this recent House Ag Committee hearing on financial conditions in farm country was so important. Joey Caldwell.
My name is Joey Caldwell. I am the Senior Vice President at Greenpoint Ag. We are a farmer-owned agricultural input supplier serving farmers in rural communities in the southern U.S. Basically, we supply farmers what they need to grow crops that feed, clothe, and fuel our nation and beyond. We supply crop nutrition, seed, and crop protection products. We also provide a variety of services from agronomic and precision technology advice to application services. We do this in conjunction with our farm cooperative partners at Alabama Farmers Co-op and Tennessee Farmers Co-op. I lead our retail division that has over 85 locations across 10 states. Basically, if the SEC plays football there, we're likely there too. I also appear before you today on behalf of the Agricultural Retailers Association Board of Directors, and as the son of a proud West Tennessee farmer, this year will be my dad's 62nd crop. When I graduated college in the early 1980s, the farm economy was so bad it could barely support my dad, mother, three brothers, and me. However, this led me to a fulfilling career in supporting the American farmer. At Greenpoint, we're in the farmer's success business. We know that if the farmer isn't successful, the ag supply chain will not be successful. We believe that strong farmers make strong families. Those strong families make for strong rural communities, and it is those communities that help make the fabric of this great nation. While farmers are a fiercely resilient and independent bunch, it takes a whole lot of people working together to get them what they need. Including all y'all, farmers need a strong farm bill. Most importantly, they rely on the certainty crop insurance and price support helps provide. I know that many of you know this. I know many of you care deeply about rural America. I know there are a lot of pieces that go into legislation of this size, but I also need you to know that what matters to farmers in their communities is the certainty that the Farm Bill brings. Farmers have a critical need for that certainty. Farming isn't like other professions. If I make a mistake in this role, my company may suffer. And if that mistake is bad enough, I could lose my job. That would be hard, but I could start over. Farming is different. When a farmer plants a crop, they put more than just their job at risk. Their farm is their home, their livelihood, and pillar in their community. For many, it is also their family legacy, something passed down to them over the generations that they hope to pass down to their kids. If they make too many mistakes or the markets move against them too badly, they risk losing it all. When I consider financial conditions and the farm economy's impact on rural communities, the first word that continually comes to mind is uncertainty.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Over the weekend, good rains.
Bob Maurer is with Manduka Trading in Chicago.
And then if I look at my window today, it's still kind of drizzling a little bit, and I think it's supposed to wrap up over the next few hours. So, yeah, it's just my perch, it's just my perspective, but I also know other areas had pretty much the similar type of experience over the weekend. So net-net, the adverse weather, relatively adverse in terms of hotter and drier that had been anticipated, say, 7 to 10 days ago, did not come into fruition exactly. And as a matter of fact, in terms of the weather going forward, there's moderating temperatures for the past the 7 day period, okay? And that's going to be looking good for the crop, and especially for soybeans, because August is really the critical month for soybean yield determination. So if we can hit into August, and we are July 29th, just a couple, a few days away from the 1st of August, that's a good way to start, okay? So the market basically took all the information and discounted it. And that's why soybeans today, in my opinion, were down about 7 or 8 cents. Wheat was up about a half dozen. Corn was up a couple cents. And they did close off their lows. So the low today in November soybeans was 10.18 a bushel. We went out somewhere closer to 10.40. So we did get back 22 cents a bushel in that contract and probably ended up at the top end of the range for the day. So we'll see how this plays out over the next few days. But net-net, the market pretty much discounted the weather over the weekend, and we'll see what happens from here. So then we go back to just kind of taking a peek at what are some of the driving fundamentals. And for soybeans in particular, I guess, because we ended with that there, we got the weather, obviously we talked about that. We've also got China meal stocks. They're the highest in 5 years, kind of indicates that maybe they've got enough for at least a short period of time. So maybe meal demand vis-a-vis soybean demand doesn't really kick in for us as much as we would like, although we haven't been the main benefactor of China's business anyway. Also, we had that regulatory decision, or a court decision, I should say, end of last week, which vacated some of the EPA's blanket denial in 2022 for that small refinery exemptions. So if you're not plugged into that, basically small refineries, energy refineries, crude oil refineries are able to at times apply for exemptions to the renewable fuel mandates. And basically my interpretation is that the EPA said, no, you know, you guys are going to have to add it in anyway and go ahead and buy it anyway. We're not giving you an exemption, but that was overruled. So that kind of takes away a bit of a demand base. And I think that helped push down bean oil futures end of last week, and also maybe still kind of working its way through the soybeans also. So we'll see how that plays out over time. They did kick it back to the EPA. The court did, that is. And we'll see, you know, if there's any changes down the road, if they want to tweak the language and see if that, you know, impacts that particular potential demand base.
Bob also watches outside markets like gold.
If inflation starts to slow down, and it looks at this point, based on some recent data points that have come out from the economic numbers, that inflation on a year-on-year basis is moving slowly down towards that 2%. If we get to that number, can you still justify gold prices up here in the, you know, the mid 2000s? And I don't know. You know, we'll see how that plays out. I'm watching it technically, keeping an eye on that, but I'm kind of leaning towards the downside. We'll see how it plays out.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
If you are a farmer or any kind of outdoor worker, this week you may be running into heat that is a lot more intense than anything you may have encountered before. And some of your best friends in that case?
Rest, water, and shade.
Especially water. Ohio State University Health and Safety Professor Dee Jepson says drink at least one cup of water every 20 minutes.
A lot of times people think, I don't want to drink that much, I'll be sick. If you're really out working in this heat, every 20 minutes, drink a cup of water. You'll feel much better.
Also, wear the lightest, loosest-fitting, light-colored clothes you can get away with. And finally, here's one more clothing suggestion.
Throw away that beloved ball cap.
Instead, she says wear hats with at least a 3-inch brim all the way around them.
They block the UV exposure from your face, the top of your ears, the back of your necks. 80% of our skin cancer comes from that part of our bodies.
And wide-brim hats help keep you cooler as well. Gary Crawford, Washington.